Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast.
So we're signing a very important document, pretty comprehensive document, and we've had a really great term together, a great relationship. In the meantime, I believe that they'll be handing it out on behalf of Chairman Kim and myself. And we're both very honored to sign the document. Thank you. Would you like to say something to the press?
We had a historic meeting and decided to leave the past behind, and we are about to sign a historic document. The world will see a major change. I would like to express my gratitude to President Trump to make this meeting happen.
감사합니다.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Mr. President, did he agree to denuclearize first?
We're starting that process very quickly. Very, very quickly. Absolutely.
All right, glad you're with us. We are back in Singapore, and that was the president at a press conference. It was early this morning. Let me give you some perspective. We have a lot of ground to get to today. We'll have full, complete analysis of the events from yesterday. And so much happened here while we were here. Let me start and go behind the scenes. So last night, while on Hannity, this all begins. They meet, they shake hands. The meeting, the timing of everything pretty much went according to plans. 45 minutes alone, then they had a dinner, et cetera, et cetera. Then I started getting word while they were actually meeting, you know, working my sources and people that I know, that this might be bigger than people know, and that things were going apparently extraordinarily well, and that something might be happening. So it's just pretty amazing. And I don't know where to really start here, because there's a high level of frustration as it relates to how the rest of the media in our country and in the world, nobody saw this coming. Nobody saw, and I said this yesterday, nobody saw anything about Trump coming. I've never seen people more wrong, more often about one person than everything that we see about the media. You know, I mean, go back. I really love playing on this program when Donald Trump is announcing he's running for president, talking about running for president. And what do we hear from everybody? It's the funniest thing in the world to them. Trump, run, please run, please, pretty please run. And nobody thought he could win the primary, dominate the debates, dominate in the polls from the beginning. Nobody saw that he was going to win the nomination. Then the general election, you know, even the people that were trying to undermine Donald Trump and exonerate Hillary, which we'll all get back to later on this week, the Clinton email investigation, server investigation, Inspector General report is coming out. Nobody saw the victory in November of 2016. You know, as Newt Gingrich likes to say, and he'll join us on the program today, as he likes to say, at 10 o'clock Eastern time on November 8th, 2016, there was a collective psychotic meltdown on the part of people on the left, liberals, Democrats, and the media, because the people in the media are just as culpable in being wrong about Donald Trump. You know, 500 days, we went through an extensive list of all of the accomplishments of the president. Nobody thought those things were going to happen in 500 days. Nobody thought this would turn around in 500 days. I won't go through all the statistics, because most of you now know them. Most of the American people are now seeing it. Polls are now showing it. And so it all goes down. They come up with this agreement. We'll go through the details of it in a second, but just to give you a little behind the scenes. And all of a sudden, a deal is struck and an agreement is signed. And it's about denuclearization. And listen, I thought when it started out anything like this would happen this quickly. But I do believe it's possible, and I think the parallels with Reagan are deep and they are profound if you have the ability to somewhat objectively look at Donald Trump. And the problem with the media and the Democrats, they don't have that capacity anymore. It doesn't matter what he does. If I said this on the TV show last night. If Donald Trump gave $1 million to every American citizen out of his own pocket, they would say, well, why didn't he give two? Because he's so cheap. That's why. He's a billionaire and he's cheap. He should have given $2 million to every American citizen. He's not as rich as he says he is. And that's why he didn't do it. He lied. Lied. You know, there's this phenomenon in the media, and you can see it especially on cable news. It's like somebody says, he's really, 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 really bad. No, he's not really, 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 really bad. He's really, 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 really bad. And then they try to outbad themselves. And they think that they're being, you know, superior intellectuals in some ways. But the parallels to Reagan are amazing because it was Republicans, just like there are so many Republicans that don't like Trump, Republicans that didn't like Ronald Reagan. It wasn't a Democrat that referred to Reagan, candidate Reagan, as an amiable dunce, as a B-list actor, you know, bedtime with Bonzo. It was Republicans that did that. It was George Herbert Walker Bush that referred to Reaganomics as voodoo economics. Well, what did voodoo Reagan economics get us? 20 million new jobs were created. He doubled revenues to the federal government. The longest peacetime period of economic growth in our history up until that point, and America became prosperous and America became confident. You know, in the years leading up to the 1980 election, I mean, everybody thought America was ungovernable. Maybe we can't get by and with a system with one president anymore. It wasn't true. We just, you know, finished the years of Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter, in many ways, paving the way for Reagan. Well, Barack Obama paving the way for Donald Trump because of all of his failure. And the reason most Americans don't know how profoundly bad Obama was is because the media protected Obama. They didn't tell you the things that I told you every single day in 2016. 13 million more Americans on food stamps, 8 million more in poverty. I told you all those things because the media wouldn't. And it was a reminder of just how bad things had gotten and what a failure it was. And then the horrific Iranian deal, the apology tours. I mean, I can go on and on. But here's another real major difference. And if we learn this lesson, really profoundly, deeply understand it in our soul and solar plexus and absorb it, maybe we can apply the lessons and make the world a safer place. Reagan was excoriated, beaten up. The evil empire. They're an evil empire. The same thing. After Reagan said that, everybody said the same thing. The California cowboy is going to initiate World War III against the Soviet Union. Well, what did Donald Trump say about what Kim Jong-un? Little rocket man, fire and fury. My button's bigger than your button, and my button works. Reagan took what he inherited from Jimmy Carter, what he called a gap of vulnerability militarily that we had. Planes couldn't fly, ships couldn't go to sea, and he rebuilt the military, which bankrupted the former Soviet Union. They could not keep up. The reason Reagan walked away from Reykjavik was over strategic defense. Media mocked that as Star Wars. You see all the similarities here. And in the case of the president, we go from fire and fury. We go literally from Little Rocket Man. We go from all of this back and forth. My button's bigger. And in 7 months, we now have what happening? A missile has not been fired over Japan since December. We have the dismantling of one of his nuclear test sites. In my interview that'll air tonight on Hannity, the president says, oh no, it's actually more profound than that. And he talked about it a little bit in his press conference. We got the three hostages home. Now, maybe people, why the media doesn't put a lot of, I thought they cared about human rights. To get three Americans home safely, as an American, I'm really happy about that. The fact that they're back with their families, that's a big deal to me. That's a big concession. The fact that little rocket man Kim Jong-il crosses the DMZ, not firing missiles, he's willing to talk about denuclearization. The fact that when Trump canceled the summit within 8 hours, he's pretty much begging him to come back to the table. Why wouldn't the president go? What did we lose here? So anyway, so this all goes down. We get the agreement that comes out. Again, this is all happening at a rapid pace. I'm getting a call that my interview time has been moved up because they were going to have the president's holding this press conference. And I literally had to beg them when I got there. I said, I can't do this interview unless I get, you have my word. This is embargoed. I will not do this interview. I said, the first time I do it, it'll be on Fox and Friends. I was on Fox and Friends 6 Eastern this morning, if I can remember correctly. And without any sleep. Anyway, so it goes on to say that the president of the United States, the chairman of North Korea, Kim Jong-un, come up with this joint agreement, this joint statement, and they have basically agreed comprehensive, in-depth, sincere exchange of opinions and ideas related to the establishment of new U.S.-North Korea relations and the building of a lasting and robust peace regime on the Korean Peninsula. Nobody thought when Reagan said evil empire and, well, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall, that it would end in the reunification of Germany and the wall would actually be coming down. I actually asked the president about humanitarian issues, the possibility of reunification between North and South Korea. I'm not going to give you the answer until that airs tonight because I think it's a fascinating interview. And then it goes on to say that the president is committed to providing the security guarantees. Now, absolutely, I'm sure North Korea wants something in this deal. As of now, they've got nothing except a photo op with the president, which the media tried to turn into in the press conference. Well, the human rights abuse, how do you want the human rights abuses to end if you don't have a conversation and don't have any influence with Kim Jong-un? All right, when we come back, I'll tell you the four main parts of this agreement that we have. All right, as we continue, Sean Hannity Show, we are in Singapore with the best summit coverage available on your radio dial. They came up with four basic points. Is that one, the U.S.-North Korea commit to establish new relations in accordance with the desires of the people of the two countries for peace and prosperity. Two, the U.S. and North Korea will join efforts to build a lasting and stable peace regime on the Korean Peninsula. One thing that I'm sure Kim Jong-un is worried about is Gaddafi gives up his nukes and Saddam Hussein supposedly gives up his nukes, but really the Israelis took out the whole system. A little bit of history for everybody. They reaffirmed their April 27th, 2018 declaration that North Korea would work towards the complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. The devil's going to be in the details, but I think everybody knows. And as the president said, this came up late. And what an amazing thing if you're a family member in the U.S. and you have the remains of a loved one from the Korean War still in North Korea, you would like to get the remains of your loved one back to your country and give them the proper burial that they deserve. May not seem like a big deal. To me, that is a big deal. And that was part of it. And having acknowledged this, they signed the agreement. I'll explain when we get back from my perspective what was going on behind the scenes. We'll preview my interview with the president that'll air tonight on Hannity. Certain portions of it we released to Fox and Friends this morning. And then I'm going to take you behind the scenes. I sat through the entire press conference. Many of you might have missed it. If you did, it's really too bad because the president, without any sleep in 24 hours or 26 hours, he said, was really on his game and definitely energized by what had happened. So we got a lot to get to today. We've got Dr. Gorker on the program today. We got Sarah Carter stopping by. We got Daniel Hoffman. We got Newt Gingrich stopping by and so much more. Our toll-free number remains the same. It's 800-941-SHAWN if you want to be a part of the program. All right, we'll preview my interview with the president. That's going to air tonight, 9 Eastern on Fox News, and we will give you more of the behind-the-scenes. I got to sit in this presser in row 2. I thought I was going to get called. I was like, pick me! Now, meanwhile, I had just done an interview, and I didn't get picked. But anyway, quick break. We'll come back. We are in Singapore all week. We got a lot of other news that is coming up straight ahead. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. Sean Hannity Show. We are in Singapore, the site of, well, the historic summit that took place all throughout your night and morning. It's, believe it or not, 25 now till the top of the hour, 4 a.m. here in Singapore. And, of course, Eastern time, D.C. time, New York time, 25 before 4 p.m. Very odd to change your very, very odd to change your timing like this. All right. So all of this unfolds very, very quickly. What it's just in one sense, the fact that it's unfolding into the night in the United States is a little unfortunate because your media is so corrupt. But with that said, I was here. And with that said, I watched it unfold. With that said, I went to the summit site. I actually, the interview that you'll hopefully watch with the president and myself tonight, it goes on almost 20 minutes. The interview was in the room where Kim Jong-un and the president first took their pictures. And the adjacent room was where they had that working lunch. The balcony was to my right. The room was to my left. The dining room was to the left. And it was kind of interesting to see that behind the scenes. There are 3 secrets that I know that I can't tell because I was asked not to tell. And I have a picture of one of them. And one day this story is going to be told. It's just fascinating if you care about history. And I know many of you, you know, probably don't remember the time that Ronald Reagan met with Mikhail Gorbachev. That took a lot longer. That was all, you know, what happened and was unfolding here. It was very obvious to me that certain things were probably agreed to before they all got here, which would be typical of any kind of summit. But I think a lot of it was going to be contingent on how the two men got along. And when I did get an opportunity to interview the president, this was before he held what became an hour and 10-minute news conference, and I sat in the second row for it. You know what it's like to walk in that room, and there's Jim Acosta sitting 3 seats down from me, and Major Garrett is sitting there, and my buddy John Roberts is sitting there from Fox, and all these news people, literally it's like, huh? What's he doing here? And that was actually a fun moment. And it was after I had my interview with the president. And the president, was up for about 25 hours. And it makes sense. If you've never traveled 22 hours in a time zone, we all know what jet lag is. It is, for me, by far the longest flight I've ever been on. Now, I did experience going to Iraq. And when I flew to Iraq, for example, with Donald Rumsfeld, the defense secretary at the time, one of the coolest experiences I've ever had in my life because we had 2 mid-air refuelings and I was on a C-130 cargo plane. And both times, both going there and coming back, I went up and I sat in the cockpit as they did the refueling. It is one of the most spectacular military accomplishments that they do as if it is routine. And the age of the pilots that are flying us from Washington, D.C. all the way to Baghdad, they're like 22 years old. And they make this trip, you know, 2 or 3 times a week. And these mid-air, in-air refuelings, it's just, you know, you got a plane with jet fuel hovering really closely above you. And all of a sudden, while they're going, you know, 600 miles per hour, what the equivalent there is, I don't know what it is. I don't know what airspeed is. These big tubes start being launched from the fueling vehicle to the C-130 and then has to connect, and then they transfer the fuel over so you don't have to land and refuel and get back in the air. It is one of the most amazing things. That was the longest flight I'd ever had. We fly here, it's 22 hours in the air. It is a long flight. I mean, that's why, you know, here it is 3:42 a.m. here and 3:42 p.m. on the East Coast. Anyway, so it's the president with no sleep gives this press conference. It goes on well over an hour. It's in the middle of the night Eastern time. And right after I had the interview with the president, and you could just see he's on his game. Let me go to a couple of things that he said to me that I think you'll find interesting if you get a chance to watch the show tonight, or hopefully DVR the show. I asked the president about how did we go from Little Rocket Man, Fire and Fury, My Red Button's Bigger Than Yours and My Works, to now discussing denuclearization. Now go to a good relationship. Now go to the idea that, okay, because you did these things to get me here, let's take it to the next step. And Kim Jong-un saying, it's a good idea. It's time for our people. And what's interesting is the president, I asked him, was it strategic? Was it tactical? Did you do it on purpose? He had said to me, without the rhetoric, he doesn't think any of this would have happened. Just like in the case of Otto Warmbier. He literally said to me, he became friends with the family. Remember, this poor guy gets released, comes back to the United States and dies. He walks off the plane and everybody's like, oh my, what happened to this guy? And here's the president saying, without him using rhetorical strength against Kim Jong-un, he doesn't think this would happen. We wouldn't be here.
A lot of people, critics, quickly saying, when you said Little Rocket Man or Fire and Fury, or, you know, when he said, oh, I've got a red button on my desk, he said, well, mine's bigger and it works better than yours. How did it evolve from that to this? Because he did say at the very beginning, we're going to basically start over, and but that has been building behind the scenes.
Well, I think without the rhetoric, we wouldn't have been here. I really believe that, you know, we did sanctions and all of the things that you would do, but I think without the rhetoric, you know, other administrations, I don't want to get specific on that, but they had a policy of silence. If they said something very bad, very threatening and horrible, just don't answer. That's not the answer. That's not what you have to do. So I think the rhetoric, I hated to do it. Sometimes I felt foolish doing it, but we had no choice.
I hated to do it. Sometimes I felt foolish doing it, but I really had no choice. Now, if that doesn't give you a little bit of insight into the negotiating mind of the president, I don't know what will, because that is an indicator that that was a conscious, strategic, and tactical decision of the president to go hard. You add to that the sanctions, you add to that the strike force brigades off the coast of the Korean Peninsula, and then you've got the very definition of peace through strength. And I go back to the analogy, I think it's extraordinarily similar to what Reagan did with the former Soviet Union, evil empire. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. His own aides in Reagan did not want him to put those words when he went to the Brandenburg Gate and gave that speech. So I asked the president, there was a lot of press leading up to this, about how he's going to size them up in a minute and he's going to pretty much decide whether or not this is going to be doable based on a lifetime of experience, and whether or not people want to admit this or not in a minute. Really, experts tell us seconds. When you meet somebody, you do make very quick decisions, and some people have more insight into other human beings than others. And I think what the president is saying, and he actually kind of alluded to it in his press conference, is, well, that's kind of always been a gift that I've had. I've been able to size people up really, really quickly. I notice in my life, when I hire people, my gut, when I first meet them, is usually pretty good. And over time, you really begin to see if you're right or wrong. Occasionally, you're wrong, but not that often. And I know some people, like if they have thoughts about somebody that says, oh, they're not really, it's like human beings, they'll feel guilty if they think, oh, that guy is a jerk. oh, that person's not nice. You feel guilty. Well, I shouldn't judge them. I say you should really go to, I don't know, I think you should really go with your gut. And that's what the president said he was doing. And so here's the president describing that first meet and his initial reaction to Kim Jong-un.
In the room alone and then the subsequent talks with your team and their team. How honest? How brutal? What was said? Try and bring people into the room.
So we got along very well. We got along from the beginning. We started off, he and myself and two interpreters, and from the beginning we got along. And, you know, I've made the statement, and I've said it before. I've said it about a lot of different kinds of relationships. You can almost tell right at the beginning.
Did you tell at the beginning? What was that first minute?
No, I felt very good at the beginning. And we, you know, I talked about we have to denuke. This country has to be denuked, and he understood that. He fully understood it. He didn't fight it.
He did, because that was the bottom line. Look, the only thing, and I get into this in the interview with the president that'll air tonight. Oh, by the way, that we put up on the website because it was overnight, and maybe you'll see me. I was in row two, about four seats down from Jim Acosta, looking at him ask his question. The president said, that's actually a fair question. It was very funny. There were moments that were hilarious in the presser. And we put it up on Hannity.com. You can see the full press conference if you haven't had time. It's worth the hour to look at it. All right, got to take a break. We'll come back. We'll pick it up right here where we left off. Then Newt Gingrich at the top of the hour. And later on, your calls, 800-941-SEAN. And we just got a lot more ground to cover. We'll check in with Dr. Gorka, is going to stop by. We'll give you more of the behind-the-scenes observations that I had. It was an incredible day yesterday. It really was. To be there was pretty amazing. As we continue from Singapore, it's the Sean Hannity Show. I want you to hear this last thought. The interview that I have with the president will air in full, in its entirety, tonight on Hannity. And here's where the president's describing that it exceeded his expectations and he got more done than he ever expected. We got along from the beginning. All right, well, then all of a sudden, that means that the possibility, the window opens, the possibility that they can get more done than they had originally thought. Remember, the president had said when he left Washington, there's not going to be an agreement here. It's going to take 2, 3, 4, 5 meetings. This is a process. And we'll go as fast or slow as Kim Jong-un wants to go. Anyway, so this is the president describing how this moved a lot faster and they got a lot more done at the summit than he thought possible. Here's what he said.
You didn't think coming in here you were going to sign an agreement, and you said maybe it takes 2, 3, 4, 5 meetings, but you were open to going as fast or as slow as he wanted.
We got along better than I would have assumed right from the beginning. We got a lot more done today than I ever thought possible. And he's going back. He's now headed back. And I think he's going back to get this done. He wants to get it done. You know, you hear the whole thing about his father and other administrations or his grandfather. The fact is that he brings that up. But they weren't dealing with me. They were dealing with different people. And they never got very far. Nobody's ever come close to this.
Did he talk about the difference between past administrations and yours?
Yes, but I can't say that because I don't want to be the one saying it. At some point, I'm sure he'll say it.
Yeah.
But they never got it done. And they were never this close either. I mean, it was never to a point where they were like we are.
So again, you're back to the two philosophies here. Bill Clinton, $3 billion+ in cash and a promise that the North Koreans will never get nuclear weapons. Well, that didn't work out well. Or the cargo planes full of cash and other currency, Obama trying to bribe the mullahs in Iran. Well, that's not bearing fruit because they're expanding their nuclear program even as we speak. And the president's saying, no, we got a lot done. Now, as Mike Pompeo said, the hard work now follows, but a lot of progress has been made. And a lot of concessions have been made. And if you look at the psychological profile, this is what the president knew about Kim coming in. He's going to be ambiguous. He's going to show humility. He's going to be charming. He's going to laugh. And he's going to act as interested as possible. I don't think it went down that way at all. Because he faces his own problems at home. His decision is really simple. He may not survive because his country is literally gulping water. A report in one of the Chinese newspapers that the delegation of Kim Jong-un is eating $35 breakfasts at the hotel wherever they're staying, and they're buying, you know, $100 dinners, and the average monthly income of the typical North Korean is $35 a month. So you can imagine the level of poverty and hunger that also exists there. Okay, we got to take a break. We'll come back. We're in Singapore. Newt Gingrich weighs in next. Dr. Gorka stops by. Sarah Carter stops by. We're going to take calls at some point during the program today. We'll love to get your observations. 800-941-SHAWN is our number. As we continue, it's the best radio summit coverage from Singapore. It's the Sean Hannity Show.
Otto Warmbier is a very special person, and he will be for a long time in my life. His parents are good friends of mine. I think without Otto, this would not have happened. Something happened from that day. It was a terrible thing. It was brutal. But a lot of people started to focus on what was going on, including North Korea. I really think that Otto is someone who did not die in vain. I told this to his parents. Special young man, and I have to say, special parents, special people. Otto did not die in vain. He had a lot to do with us being here today.
All right, glad you're with us. It is hour two, Sean Hannity Show. Write down a toll-free telephone number as we continue our coverage. We're in Singapore for the summit between the president and Kim Jong-un. That was a really interesting comment that the president made. He goes into more detail in the interview that I had with him right after this deal was struck, and the fact that he actually goes into detail how this wouldn't have happened in all likelihood without two things. One, the tough rhetoric that he used, and he said, well, at times it was even embarrassing, but I knew I had to do it because that would bring him to the table, or at least calling him out was an important step. He had made that determination. And the other one was he'd become close to the Warmbier family. And speaking, I think, with obvious emotion, and you can judge for yourself tonight when you watch the interview on Hannity, but that it wouldn't have happened without them. All right, here for his perspective on all of this, former Speaker of the House, Fox News contributor, Newt Gingrich. He has a best-selling book out now, and I think really the definitive book on the success of the president in a little over 500 days, and the remaining challenges, not the least of which is fake news. And it's called The Truth About Our Nation's Great Comeback, Trump's America. Mr. Speaker, welcome to Singapore. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm doing great. And I want to tell you, I've been doing Fox TV today, and your interview with the president is just tremendous. I mean, they've had little segments of it on. And I remember when you first said to me, you know, you were thinking maybe you would go down to Singapore. What a great decision. And I think that you're there at a moment of just extraordinary history.
You know, I saw the possibility. You saw the possibility. One of the things, I see a lot of parallels with Reagan. Evil empire, trust but verify, peace through strength, tear down this wall, fire versus fire and fury, little rocket man, my button's bigger than yours and mine works. And Reagan, through the strength against the Soviet Union, followed up by a military buildup, Trump by a show of military force and by using economic sanctions. In both cases, the results far exceeding expectations. People that, in the case of Reagan, in the case of Trump, you have predictions in both cases by the media, they would start nuclear wars. And now we have more hope than we've ever had in the Korean Peninsula, as we never thought the Berlin Wall would come tumbling down and reunification would take place, and it did.
I think that's right. I mean, I just did my newsletter that goes at Gingrich Productions. It'll be on FoxNews.com tomorrow. And what struck me watching all this is, this is to put Trump in context. None of us thought in 14 he'd run. Almost no one thought in 15 he'd be the nominee. Almost no one thought at this stage in 16 he'd win the presidency. Last year at this stage, they thought he couldn't get anything through the Congress. And nobody, they were discounting like crazy getting the tax bill through. Now you got huge economic growth. He is the president. He has assembled a very tough national security team. And we're seeing things that Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama were incapable of achieving. I mean, this is what I watched today. My dad served in Korea in 53, and I've had a long interest in North Korea. And what I watched today was historic and, frankly, unbelievable. You could never invent.
I mean, that's really the thing. And you know what was interesting for me is I don't go to these press conferences. And the president had said he didn't have any sleep for 25 hours. And it might have been one of his best press conferences ever. I thought it was so good. I put it up on Hannity. kennedy.com. By the way, it's right next to your book, and people can just click on it. Because
that's a great privilege for me.
Listen, I don't promote Amazon.com pretty much for anybody but you, because it's where a lot of people buy books. But, you know,
you're sitting there. Look, you're sitting there in Singapore in the middle of history that the rest of your life you'll be able to say, I was here at a moment when the world turned in a decisive way, and I knew the guy who did it. That's pretty remarkable.
Well, listen, I have been blessed. Every once in a while, in my more objective moments, when I can finally slow down for a few minutes and get perspective, I literally think I have no idea how I went on this crazy, you know, career ride, because I experienced history with you too by emceeing the night that you became speaker. And one of the points you make in the book, there's really three huge, if you will, moments of modern day conservatism. Reagan was one. You and the contract were two, and Donald Trump, although nobody sees it yet, is three.
Yeah, and I think, look, even bigger than that, in your analogy with Reagan is exactly right. Reagan, because Margaret Thatcher frankly coached him and said, she had met with Gorbachev, and she said, you know, I think we can work with him, unlike the preceding three dictators who had all died in office, and Reagan had never met with any of them. And Reagan understood the importance of creating a personal relationship. And I talked to George Shultz, who had been Secretary of State at the time, and Shultz said, and this is his version, that he told the senior staff, we have to let President Reagan meet one-on-one with Gorbachev. And they were all said, oh, my God, you can't do that. It'll be too dangerous. He said, look, he's been studying Gorbachev. He knows what he believes. He'll take him to the cleaners. Well, I think that 30-minute meeting that started this whole process with only the two principals and the interpreter was extraordinarily important, because what's happening here, and I don't think people get this yet, what's happening here is they're beginning to unlock a process. That process will open up North Korea. Now, we don't know how exactly it's going to go. There's going to be a lot of zigzags, et cetera. But I do know that Mike Pompeo graduated first at West Point, graduated very high at Harvard Law, is very tough, and he's the lead negotiator for the details. So I'm pretty confident that we're going to see some action that will be very exciting, and that just think about this from the standpoint of the North Korean people. They actually saw their leader in a modern city. I mean, the impact of Singapore, the wealth of Singapore, the modernity of Singapore, compared to what it's been like in North Korea, that had to be a breathtaking change. And everybody who came down with him found themselves suddenly in a world where they're going, wait a second, why can't we be like that? And that was a big part of what led to the collapse of the Soviet Empire, was when people would go out and realize how backwards they were, how much it didn't work, and they would show up and say, hey, you know, it's time for real change.
You know, it's very interesting, and you got to ask yourself, and a lot of this, I think, was missed on the media, because it, like they said Reagan would start World War III, the California Cowboy. You remember this. You were there. You knew Reagan. And he'd start a nuclear holocaust. It's almost the same kind of predictions. And I was making this point on the program yesterday, is that, and you, I quote you often about what happened at 10 p.m. election night, November 2016, is there was this sort of mass psychosis that has taken place in terms of both the media and the Democrats. Nobody thought this can happen. They've been wrong about Trump every single step of the way. They never thought he'd win the primary. They never thought he'd win the election. They never thought that he would follow through on promise after promise after promise, from, you know, ending burdensome regulation, pulling out of the Iranian deal, meeting with all these foreign leaders, like at a speed, we called it the speed of Trump. I think you defined that. And then here we are. Now, it's not done. The hard work begins, as Mike Pompeo said, but to think that there is that we have the North Korean dictator that stopped firing missiles over Japan, threatening the world, crossing the DMZ, releasing hostages, already dismantling a nuclear test site, and in a joint communique, if you will, is willing to talk about the denuclearization of the entire peninsula. That is a spectacular development for the world, and I would think everybody would be happy, but apparently some are not.
Well, it's kind of interesting to watch because, again, I said earlier today, right after this happened, I said, you know, let's not get euphoric. This is the beginning of a process. We're not going to be guaranteed success tomorrow evening. But I think it is fair to say that the steps that they've taken, the very idea that you could get Kim Jong-un to leave North Korea, go to Singapore, have this kind of a session, meet with the open press, set the stage now for the next round of having Americans in North Korea, which will truly be historic. And I think these things are just dramatically more important than people realize. And I think that given the long period of difficulty in Korea, this has got to be very, very hopeful. And I do want to make one point, Sean, that I think is people keep missing. We can afford to denuclearize South Korea because we have ballistic missiles in Montana that can reach North Korea in 29 minutes. We have missiles sitting on Trident submarines. We have capability in our nuclear aircraft carriers. And we have B-2 bombers sitting in Guam. So we can say cheerfully, you know, you get rid of your nukes. We don't need to have any nukes in South Korea. But by the way, if you ever try to cross the border militarily, we'll be back in 30 minutes.
Well, I think that's an important point, too. I don't even think it was a concession for the president to say, all right, now that we have crossed this barrier, now, okay, we're not going to have joint defense exercises with South Korea because, number one, it costs a fortune. And number two, do we really need to, because now we're making all this progress? I don't think we can discuss all of this. And if we're going to make Reagan comparisons, and I'd be the first to say they were very different personalities. You knew them both. You know Trump. You knew Reagan well. But the fact that there's no cargo planes full of cash, there's no bribery with energy subsidies, there's no false promises here, and that there's no moving at all, seems no movement at all about what is the fundamental goal, which is the complete, verifiable, irreversible denuclearization. That is key, and anything short of that is just not going to be acceptable to the president. And he already canceled one meeting. I think he would walk away in four seconds or less.
Look, one of the things people need to remember about Donald J. Trump is he spent his entire lifetime becoming a billionaire because he knows how to read contracts and he knows how to figure out whether or not you're performing. And if they end up not performing, he'll do what he has to. But he doesn't want to. I mean, the way he has turned in terms of tone is really important because he is saying to Kim Jong-un, look, if you'll be nice, I'll be nice. If you'll cooperate, I'll cooperate. But just remember, tomorrow morning we'll still be the most powerful nation in the world. We still have all the sanctions on, and we're only going to take steps one by one. And by the way, today, as you know because you're there, the North Koreans announced they were dismantling their missile test site for their rockets. So we say we won't hold a military exercise this year. They dismantle their missile test site. That's progress. That's a step down the road in a way that is historic.
With all of this happening, every economic statistic now becoming a record, it's almost like a record a day, record low unemployment for so many states, so many different groups, Hispanic Americans, African Americans, women in the workplace, and now this. What is it? What is the impact? Is it too early to tell the impact as it relates to 2018?
Well, I mean, look, I think, first of all, on the economic side, as you point out, we are now growing at more than twice the rate we were under Obama. We have the lowest black unemployment in American history. Things are getting better every month. We just had a new report out today about confidence among small business owners who are hiring more people, raising wages. So all of that's going to help, and all that makes Republicans very competitive this fall. The other thing, though, is the change in stature. I mean, it's going to be almost impossible for people to not recognize that President Trump is a remarkable leader who has actually done more to earn a Nobel Prize than Barack Obama did in 8 years, despite his having gotten one the first couple of months he was president, and that Trump is a serious man. I mean, you can't look at what just happened and not be just struck with how truly serious he is mm-hmm. and how much he's accomplishing in a way that very few people could have.
Mr. Speaker, congrats on the book, another big New York Times bestseller, Trump's America, The Truth About America's, Our Nation's Great Comeback. Thank you for being with us. We'll have you on TV
as always
this week. And hopefully a lot of people will be watching the interview that I had right after the summit with the president one-on-one. That'll air tonight on Hannity on the Fox News Channel. We're in Singapore, the best radio summit coverage available on your radio dial. Quick break, right back. Sarah Carter, Sebastian Gorka, and your call straight ahead. All right, 25 now until the top of the hour. Sean Hannity Show as we continue from Singapore. And the interview that I had with the president immediately following what was the joint announcement between Kim Jong-un and President Trump, it didn't get a lot of play, but it's a big deal. The POW MIA issue for families that never got the remains of their loved ones post the, well, ongoing Korean War, which is obviously now coming to an end. I want to go to the president. It was actually pretty funny. Fake news CNN Trump hater Jim Acosta gets up to ask a question. What was interesting for me is I was in the room for the whole press conference. I think it went on like an hour and 10 minutes. We put it up on our website, Hannity.com, if you want to take a look at it. We might be able to tweet that out. Can we tweet the whole press conference or a link to it out? We'll tweet it out on at Sean Hannity. And so the president goes, be nice and respectful, which he never is. But here's how it went down.
Yeah, go ahead. Be nice. Be respectful.
I'll be very respectful, sir. What did Kim Jong-un say to you to give you the confidence that for once in the history of North Korea, they are not cheating the system and gaming the world and gaming the people who will have to go in and make sure that they're actually giving up their nuclear arsenal?
Yeah, I mean, very fair question. He actually mentioned the fact that they proceeded down a path in the past, and ultimately, as you know, nothing got done. In one case, they took billions of dollars during the Clinton regime, and nothing happened. That was a terrible thing. And he actually brought it up to me. And he said, we have never gone this far. I don't think they've ever had the confidence, frankly, in a president that they have right now for getting things done and having the ability to get things done. And he was very firm in the fact that he wants to do this. I think he might want to do this as much or even more than me.
Well, it's obvious that the only thing is I heard that question. I kind of rolled my eyes a little bit because I'm thinking, did you not see what had happened in the lead up to this summit? Did you not notice that missiles aren't being fired over Japan? That since December. Have you not noticed that the region isn't being destabilized with the constant firing of missiles, test firing of missiles? Did you not notice that one of the nuclear missile test sites had been dismantled? It appears that it didn't get to be part of the agreement. And the president will tell me in this interview that we have for tonight on Hannity that other concessions were made about specific sites that we have viewed as problematic, but it wasn't mentioned. So they made the president was saying to me that there's been a lot more progress than we even that they were even able to get into the joint statement or the hostages released or the willingness even to talk about denuclearization. All right. Joining us now, investigative reporter, Fox News contributor Sarah Carter. Of course, best known for all her great work on the deep state. What's fascinating is many of you may not know that she broke the story. Remember when we learned about Obama's rules of engagement and the fact that there was all of these rules put in place that basically put handcuffs on our own military and their ability or lack of ability to fight back against the terrorists that they were sent to fight? This is insanity. That was a huge story. But anyway, she has traveled all over the world and covering all the issues in Afghanistan and Pakistan and Iran and Saudi Arabia and Iraq. And so this is not her first go around with following big stories. And she's been here in Singapore on the ground with us, and she'll be on Hannity tonight and reacting to my interview with the president. You know, a lot of people know you only because of what we've been doing in the last year and a half now, but your background is pretty phenomenal in terms of national security. How many places have you traveled to?
Oh, I've traveled quite a bit over the last few decades. Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq, Mexico, Central America. I spent most of my career covering either narco-terrorism or terrorism itself. I was on the war zone, out on the front lines with our troops. most of the time during my career in Washington, D.C., I spent on the front lines in Afghanistan and Pakistan with our troops.
So. You know, but you went deep into Afghanistan.
Correct.
You knew warlords in Afghanistan. You're telling me, telling us all a story yesterday that I thought was pretty fascinating about one particular warlord that you met, and you were not exactly in the green zone in these areas. You were deep into the heart of Taliban territory in some cases.
Yes, I believed it was important, Sean, for journalists, and there were a few journalists like me that went out there. Some of them have lost their lives covering the war, so I think it's important to honor the people that have done their work to bring the truth to the American people and to cover our troops on the front line. We spent a lot of time on the border with the troops, leaving the green zones, what people would consider safe zones, and they're not always safe. I mean, Kabul, we've seen a number of bombings. We've seen the Taliban really infiltrate the cities and make it potentially dangerous for everybody. We've seen people killed there over the past years. It's a big concern.
And but you were undercover a lot. In other words, you would dress in... not a burqa, but...
I would dress appropriately. So I would wear a shawl chemise. I would cover my head with a scarf. I wasn't necessarily wearing a burqa, but I would go out with the Afghans. We spent so much time on the road, and I was able to understand the country in a different way than maybe people would understand if they were just seeing it from a forward operating base where the military was at. So we would spend time driving through Panjshir Valley up to Mazar-e-Sharif. And you're right, I did have an opportunity to have dinner and meet and get to know General Abdul Rashid Dostum. So it's very interesting.
Isn't that general the one that was just responsible for killing hundreds of Taliban, burning them, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, there are a lot of stories about General Dostum. You know, Dostum is a very fierce man, and he has a reputation. And so it makes it difficult when you're interviewing somebody like that with that kind of a reputation. But also remember, General Dostum was the guy that assisted both the CIA and the U.S. military when we first went back into Afghanistan after 2001. He, on horseback, with our CIA and with our special forces, went after Al-Qaeda. Mm-hmm. So we need those guys. You know, we need to be able to deal with them. We're in another part of the world. They have a different way of life. It's about survival. And sometimes the brutality is unbearable for us because we live in the United States. We live with such freedom and opulence compared to places like this.
You even said, describing Afghanistan, as we were all having this big discussion, and Daniel Hoffman was there, and Dr. Gorka was there, and you were describing your experiences, and you know, you literally said, for the average American, they just don't know that this, we're going back like 1500 years in terms of the life that they're living. They, you know, an indoor toilet to them would be like, huh? What's that?
That's right. That's right. I mean, Afghanistan is like going back 2,000 years before Christ in some places. I mean, there's no running water. People live from the land, and they really hadn't had any exposure. In fact, a lot of our troops, even me, they would say, are you Russian? Because they would think, oh, this must be the Russians are still here because their villages were so isolated. And you're right. There was a really interesting quick story that I'd like to bring up General Michael Flynn, because he wrote an excellent report while he was in Afghanistan. And I remember talking to him about this. There was a village in Afghanistan where we put millions of dollars bringing water into the people. And the United States thought, this is amazing. We can't believe we did this. We brought water into this village. When they went back to go check on the village after the pipes had been installed, it was going into their kolots, their little homes. All of the pipes were destroyed. Everything was destroyed. Millions of dollars wasted. And they thought, this must be the Taliban. And in the end, what they realized, it was the women of the village. Because the only time the women had to go outside to meet and to talk to one another was when they went to the well. So bringing the water into their homes just isolated them even more. So this is what I mean about understanding another culture. And this is what makes Trump's meeting with Kim Jong-un so important. This is a huge victory if we can keep it moving forward. This is a nation with nuclear weapons. This is a man who was apparently very unstable. And this is a president reaching out to someone and saying, wait a minute, let's find a way to find one common piece of ground, a way to make this work. And in the scheme of all things, that's great news. It's better than what we saw in November, where he was testing the ICBM that, by all accounts, terrified our intelligence community. I can tell you.
Well, remember, they were talking about ICBMs that he was now testing, and he has the nuclear weapons. And then they're talking about reaching New York, Boston, and the continental United States.
Absolutely, with the capability of reaching the United States. Another thing that was a huge concern is the ability for that ICBM, and what they noticed was how the trajectory of it. It went over 2,000 miles straight up into space. What do we have in space? We have satellites. Those satellites basically run the world. They run our banking systems. They run our internet. I mean, a destabilizing effect would be to take out one of those satellites. Can you imagine what would happen globally?
What is the reason then and the motivation of Kim Jong-un? Was it the economic sanctions? Was it the president's tough rhetoric coupled with the military presence he threw off the coast of the Korean Peninsula? You know, six strike brigades, Navy strike brigades off the coast. Was it the suffering of his people? Did he wake up and realize that my rule is in jeopardy because there's no food and people are suffering and dying? Did all of a sudden the Kim regime have a moment of compassion for his people? Or was it fear?
I don't think it was either of those things. I think it's a combination of things. I think that he is very isolated from the rest of the world. Of course, I don't know Kim Jong-un, so I can't analyze him, but he seems to be, you know...
I thought you were best friends.
No, that's Dennis Rodman's job, and he seems to know him. But I think it was a combination of things. It was the threat that he understood that President Trump means business. He can't gauge President Trump, just like Vladimir Putin can't gauge President Trump and never has been. He doesn't understand where is this man coming from. But he also understood that he meant business, that he was putting out a military threat. Also, Kim Jong-un is very isolated from the rest of the world. He's a narcissist, but he's very alone. And I think that if we're looking at a personality, he was saying to himself, this is the one chance I have to change things around. This is my moment to put my father behind me and to tread my own new path. And that may be what people will find out.
I also think the Chinese and the president forging a good relationship with China had a big part to play. And when we discussed this last night on TV, well, I'll probably get back into it tonight. There was a moment where China sent back a shipment of coal and ordered an American shipment in its place, which was, okay, we've got control of the finances here. And I think the partnership, the good relationship that President Trump had with the president of China played a big role in this. All right, we got to take a break. We will come back. We are in Singapore, the best radio coverage available for you as we continue. We're also going to have our interview with the president, President Trump, post-summit on Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern, 9 a.m. local time, and then we'll get reaction. Sarah Carter will be with us. Dr. Gorka will be with us. Daniel Hoffman, they're all on the ground here with us. Also, we'll preview when we get back the IG report. All right, as we continue, we are in Singapore. Our interview with the president tonight, 9 Eastern, Hannity, Fox News, and Sarah Carter is here with us in Singapore. All right, IG report Thursday. But more importantly, there's also a lot going on behind the scenes. We saw the letter earlier this week and late last week where the Freedom Caucus and others, they've had it. They were supposed to get documents from the DOJ. It literally didn't happen. Big fight breaks out. What are we going to expect as the week unfolds here, do you think?
Well, I think what we're seeing is a lot of movement happening today. We know that members, Chairman Nunes, as well as others, are going to the House leadership. They're going to be talking to Paul Ryan. They're going to be talking to others, and they're going to say, look, we don't believe in this Gang of Eight meeting that the DOJ wants to take place. This is not Gang of Eight material. They're trying to keep it from the public. They're trying to keep it from us and from sharing it with the rest of the members of Congress. They're going to fight that tooth and nail.
Are we talking about committee chairmen here? Don't they have a right to all of this information? And doesn't the rest of Congress have a right to all of this information?
Absolutely. They're there to conduct oversight. This is why the American people, this is why Congress, these are elected officials. The American people have a right to know what's in these documents.
So there's going to be a big, huge fight.
There's going to be a big fight, and they're not going to stop, Sean. There's going to be a big fight. I can tell you that the Freedom Caucus members are gearing up for a big fight.
Big fight meaning they're going to use the word impeachment. of people like Rod Rosenstein.
That's what I'm hearing. That's exactly what I'm hearing. Now, things could change, but they are definitely having a meeting, and that's what we could be looking forward to in the next week or so.
All right, Sarah Carter, she'll join us tonight on Hannity, 9 Eastern, right here from Singapore. We'll actually be here for the rest of the week as we continue our coverage. And, of course, when the IG report is released, we'll have all the details. When we come back, Dr. Sebastian Gorka, he also is here with us in Singapore. We'll get to that. We'll come back and we'll continue the best summit radio coverage available. It's the Sean Hannity Show. We're glad you are with us, and we will continue from Singapore.
A summit is not an accomplishment for the American president, Brian. It is a major accomplishment for Kim Jong-un. And in fact, the spectacle of seeing the American flags along with the DPRK flags as the backdrop for that handshake is really jarring, actually, to see, to witness. In fact, I would say it's somewhat disgusting.
Just because something hasn't happened before doesn't mean it's historic. That's one thing. I think when you call something historic, it means that it has a good chance of having lasting implications. And I think it's very unclear, at least to my layman's eye, that this does that.
It's really interesting because the more we're talking about North Korea, the less we're talking about Russia, right? The less we're talking about issues at home.
Kim Jong-un lies, and he said Donald Trump lies. So it is at this point, and I've talked to two former senior intelligence officials, it is a known unknown what was discussed, and it is not knowable that we'll ever know
what happened
in that meeting, because both men are known and established liars.
Donald Trump, we know, will lie about what was said in that room. He might also say something true that was said in that room. That might happen. He will also take something that was said in that room and twist it to his advantage in a way that a lot of politicians might. But he will definitely, without question, invent things that were not said in that room and claim they were.
I don't think anyone thinks that Donald Trump cares in some deep way, just as a person, whether about the substance of the matter. Like, is there verified denuclearization? Is there a move towards liberalization?
Or any of the human rights issues
right,
that Nick's talking about. I imagine him making that case.
Right, he cares about the headlines, and everyone knows that who's on the other side of the table from it.
And then you see him huddling, these pictures of him huddling, you know, with the other guy, with Putin. You know, it's really a statement.
He can relate.
He likes Putin.
Donald Trump can relate to authoritarians. He, as a former businessman, he likes absolute control. And
is he a wannabe despot?
I've conceded that for years now.
You've already mentioned the jet lag. The issues are too complicated for him. He said in so many words, he's not really up on the issues. In the sense, it starts a process, and it's better than threatening each other. So that's the good part of it. But at the end of the day, I don't see what you could get out of a one-on-one meeting like that. And will he even remember what was said at that point? And will he cover the main points?
For Kim Jong-un, this is already a victory because he wants legitimacy. He wants a place on the international stage. He wants to be recognized as an equal by the president of the United States. He wants to be seen as a nuclear power. And he's achieving all that. This is a tremendous propaganda victory for him. Now, Scott just suggested it was a huge victory for Donald Trump simply to come to this summit. Well, you know, I beg to differ because, in fact, any previous president could have easily had a summit with any previous leader of North Korea because they've all been very eager to be legitimated by the president of the United States. And Donald Trump is the first one to agree to do that.
The U.S. and world powers reaching a major agreement with Iran, blocking one of our biggest rivals from developing a nuclear weapon.
The president is about to deliver a statement on this historic nuclear deal reached with Iran overnight. This agreement is supposed to freeze that country's pursuit of a nuclear weapon.
Has the U.S. and its allies successfully blocked Iran from making a nuclear bomb, at least for now?
But tonight, the United States could be entering a new era in its relationship with Iran.
I think it begins to change the dynamics of a tense relationship of 36 years between Washington and Tehran. I think the deal provides more than the United States anticipated, and I think it could help prevent an arms race in the region that would be detrimental to not just the Middle East, but to the whole world.
All right, news roundup, information overload hour. Glad you are with us, the Sean Hannity Show. We're in Singapore, and what we played for you there is, if this does not prove how abusively biased and corrupt and agenda-driven the news media is, I don't know what will. you have on the one side, you've got a president that is able to negotiate without giving a single thing up. He's able to get, just for Kim Jong-un to get this meeting, he's dismantled the nuclear test site. He stopped firing missiles over Japan and saber-rattling. He released three American hostages. He crossed the DMZ into the arms of the South Korean president. And he's now in a joint message saying, yeah, this is about the complete, verifiable, irreversible denuclearization of the entire North Korean peninsula. But when Obama gives $150 billion in cash and other currencies flying in cargo planes over to the mullahs of Iran that are chanting death to America, death to Israel, burning the American flag, burning the Israeli flag, oh, history. Trump, this is propaganda. Nothing good is going to come out of this. Anyway, Dr. Sebastian Gorka, he is gracious enough to join us at this early hour in the morning, 5 a.m. Singapore time, 5 p.m. on the East Coast in New York and D.C., and 2 o'clock on the West Coast. The time zone change is brutal, isn't it? It really
is. Your body doesn't get used to it.
It really doesn't. I mean, but you know what? I wouldn't have it any other way. So you see the difference. We talk a lot about media bias. It's almost like they're incapable now in the media of just saying, this is a really good thing. The president gave up nothing. No, their argument is he gave this dictator with human rights abuses, the one that's not firing missiles 2,000 miles up in the
right,
air.
Right.
They're giving him, you know, he gave everything. The president gave nothing. And now we got this agreement yesterday to move forward. Hard work continues. Pretty amazing.
Stunning. I mean, we are living history. I don't think the enormity of what we saw with our own eyes here yesterday has fully sunken in yet. But with regards to the audio you just played, for months there's been this phrase that some commentators have used of TDS, Trump Derangement Syndrome. And it was funny. It was, you know, amusing, lighthearted.
You're saying my jabs are amusing.
No. For people it was. But, Sean, I think this is a true psychological condition. This isn't a joke now. We had for decades, probably more than a century, two rules in national politics that everybody abided by. And the first one was, you don't criticize this country when you go abroad. Hillary broke that. We've seen that. That rule is toast. It's gone. And the other one was, you don't allow an ideological filter to pervert your interpretation of our national interest. Now, national security, you don't put that through some kind of lens. Either it's good for America or it isn't. And the idea that we have a truly historic event occur that could close a 65-year-old armistice in which we have guys still missing. We have Korean names, MIA, on the, you know, the DMZ, up north, Panmunjom, you name it. And we have a chance to close it all down. And the person who made it possible is being lambasted for talking to the dictator who's finally said, okay, I'm gonna sit down with you, when they were praising his predecessor, who was doing the wave at a baseball game, sitting next to the dictator of Cuba.
No, he was loved because he went on an apology tour for the United States of America. Look, we're not a perfect country. I say this often, but there's no country in the history of mankind that has accumulated more power and abused it less, and accumulated more power and used that power for the advancement of the human condition than the United States of America.
On multiple occasions, look at the history of the 20th century. We didn't need to send our doughboys to the trenches in World War I. There was no national security necessity. Our nation was not going to be invaded by the Prussians. And what did we do? We sent them to help the Europeans save themselves from themselves.
Again and again.
And then World War II.
Yeah.
And then we mobilized. Our army was smaller in 1939 than the army of Belgium. And what did we do to save the Europeans? We mobilized more than 10 million GIs into uniform to save the Europeans from themselves again and to prevent the full extermination of the Jewish people. We didn't have to do that. We could have just dealt with Japan. Japan attacked us. We could have just gone after Tojo, but we didn't. We went to Europe to save the Europeans. And then what? For the next 40 years, we stood by the Europeans. We financed their defense to win the Cold War. Not because of some kind of desire to invade Europe and occupy it.
Just the opposite.
Right, to liberate it.
To liberate it, and the only thing we might have asked for in exchange is a plot of land to bury our dead.
Exactly, absolutely.
You know, think of the hundreds of thousands of Americans that have paid the price. Look, I wrote a book once, Deliver Us From Evil, defeating fascism, Nazism, and liberalism, because you got to beat the liberal ideology that creates the appeasement, the weakness,
right,
that creates the conditions, I would argue, for dictatorships to flourish. And I think we see that here. And America, in the last 100-plus years, you know, the world has watched 100 million souls be destroyed.
Yes.
In the name of communism, fascism, Nazi, as you mentioned, Tojo's to Japan. And
no, hang on. Let's be specific here, because you know, my family lived through fascist occupation, and then my father was arrested and tortured by communists and given a life sentence. The 100 million, Sean, only applies to communists. That comes from the Black Book of Communism, written by socialist left-wing historians who said, okay, let's sit down and write a book to add up how many people were killed by Marx's ideology. And Stephen Courtois' book is the one where we get 100 million. Then you add the Nazis, and that's 60 million people killed in World War II. 60 million. And that's 160 million souls.
Human souls.
That were expunged by totalitarian.
All right, we got to take a quick break. We'll come back more with Dr. Sebastian Gorka as we continue from Singapore. This is the Sean Hannity Show. All right, as we continue with Dr. Sebastian Gorka, he'll also be joining us on Hannity tonight, reacting to my interview with President Trump. It'll air 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. The biggest criticism is he legitimizes, again, after nuclear test sites are dismantled, hostages are released, Kim Jong-un crosses the DMZ, no more missiles are being fired, we give no money, and the worst thing the president gives is a photo opportunity. But in reality, which I think is amazing, there's really a lot of truth when he said this in his press conference. Yeah, I'll take a meeting if it means that down the line that potentially millions of lives are saved. And he talked about the population, for example,
right,
of Seoul. How many minutes would it take for a nuclear missile fired from North Korea to hit Seoul?
Seconds.
Done.
Right.
Eviscerated.
Mm-hmm.
And that reality existed, and that threat is lessened today.
Look, My blood pressure is getting a little bit high right now. We take these things seriously and we get passionate about it because of the stakes involved. And I'm going to try and just cool it for a little bit. Forget about the fact that I worked for the president in the Oval Office. Let's take politics out of this for a second. I don't care who you voted for. I don't care if you stayed at home and, you know, ate Doritos. I don't care if you wanted Bernie to win. What are the people who are criticizing the president positing as the alternative? What's the other course of action? Is it do nothing? Well, that's not going to make us safe.
No.
Or is it the pallets of cash?
Dr. Gorka.
Which is it?
No. I am convinced that there's two competing philosophies, ideologies here. There's Reagan, peace through strength, trust but verify, evil empire. There's Trump, little rocket man, fire and fury, give nothing. And then there's the Clinton, Obama paradigms, which are identical. Unless you're bribing and kissing the ass of some despot or dictator, there's no way you can have peace. And they've never achieved it with that approach and philosophy.
But why do they believe that is the important point. And I just literally finished my second book. I just sent the manuscript to the publisher.
What's the name of the book?
Why We Fight. And I came to a moment of clarity. All politics, it doesn't matter what country you live in, what region of the world, what name your party is that you voted for, all politics devolves into one question. What do you think is the role of humankind? Is it to control evil? Is it to fight for the good? Is there objective truth? Okay? Or do you believe that man can be molded, that you can do social engineering, that the truth is malleable?
No.
That's where it comes from, Sean.
No. It's all good and evil. What you're saying, I think we agree on.
Right.
It's the human experience, and history has shown, and I know you're a student of history, that there is a battle and struggle between good and evil.
And always has been and always will be.
Always will be.
Always will.
But that's a tough concept for the left to wrap their arms around.
The left will never. They cannot.
Getting worked up again.
They cannot believe it because it would predicate them underwriting the concept that truth is objective and that evil is real. For them, evil isn't real. Evil doesn't exist.
All right, Dr. Gorka, great to see you. And we'll see you tonight on Hannity. Dr. Gorka, Daniel Hoffman, Sarah Carter, as we get reaction from all of them to my interview with the president post-summit. That's happening 9 Eastern, 9 a.m. here in Singapore on the Fox News Channel. Hope you'll join us tonight. A really interesting interview. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. When we do, we'll take a couple of calls. We've Sarah Carter sticking around with her BFF, Linda. We're having some problems with the two of them here in Singapore, and we'll explain on the other side.
Hannity, always concerned for our country, always honoring our servicemen and servicewomen, and standing up for liberty every day.
All right, 25 now until the top of the hour as we continue. It's such a weird thing. I can't get over it. I know people don't really care, but it's literally 5:35 a.m. here in Singapore and 5:35 p.m. in New York and in Washington, D.C. and 2:35 a.m. in California. One of the most amazing things that happened. So the summit happens. All of this unfolds. The deal, the president announces and there's announced that there's going to be a signing. I went through the details of it earlier, and afterwards, I had an opportunity to sit down with the president, and I watched the entire press conference. I was in row two with Jim Acosta and John Roberts and, you know, all the main reporters. Actually, they were mostly pretty nice to me, which was surprising, but they were surprised I was there. Yeah, no, they hate me. No, I'm not disputing that at all. I don't live in a world of illusion. But the president mentioned in the press conference that this probably wouldn't have happened without Otto Warmbier and what had happened there, and that in a way this was honoring him. And when I spoke with the president, he went into even more detail, just like he said, that he really thought without the tough talk leading up to, you know, remember Fire and Fury and my button's bigger than yours and my button works. Pretty amazing insight in terms of the strategy, the tactics, the planning that went in long term into all of this. The family of Otto Warmbier has now thanked the president for honoring their son during this press conference. And when we air what the president said about Otto Warmbier in my interview with him tonight, I think they will. He went into more detail, and I think it'll be interesting. That's all happening at 9. Anyway, we're here in the ground in Singapore, and Linda's here with us. And so what has happened and what has been emerging now over a period of time is that Sarah Carter and Linda, what country are we in again? What's the name of it?
Singapore.
And first of all, say first of all.
First of all.
And say talk.
Everything sounds the same.
Talk.
I'm from New York.
You're from New York. But there's an emerging, it's like you and Sarah are best friends, sisters now. I mean, it's pretty amazing. You guys have become such close friends. How did this all happen? You guess you can thank me. I'm the one that brought you together.
Oh, yeah, you would say that, right?
What's so funny about that?
Well, our humor alone is what bonds us, clearly.
Yeah. Clearly, yeah. we have a bond that goes, that surpasses you, Sean, right now. We're feeling it. But we can't thank him for introducing us.
But we are grateful to you.
Grateful
for what?
Grateful that I booked the show and I thought of booking her and you liked her enough to let me keep booking her so I could get to know her better. Is that the right answer?
No, that's not the right answer.
I think it's a good answer.
Okay. But you guys have become... The thing is, we take everybody out for a big dinner because we're all working really hard. I mean, you're living crazy hours and we go to... One of the things I like about Singapore, it's clean. The people are so lovely. They're really amazing, right?
They're really amazing. I walked into a shop with Linda today. We've spent a lot of time talking to the locals. Linda's gone and done her man on the streets interviews, and I've been able to talk to a lot of the local people here in Singapore. Left my cell phone in one of the shops. Yes, of course, I did. I'm exhausted. Left my cell phone.
Wait. So this is how we realize that she doesn't have her cell phone. So we're carrying around this doll. We got to take a picture of this doll.
We're carrying around Moana for my daughter because we're taking a picture
of her. How old is your daughter?
She's 5 years old, okay. Annalise. She's beautiful, but she wanted me to carry this doll with me everywhere. So I decided I would take pictures of the doll in Singapore in unusual locations so that she would know that I remembered
her. It's not like I've taken more pictures with that cutout that every kid wants a picture of, and they get famous people to take pictures of this cutout whatever.
Gnome?
What?
Stanley?
No. Stanley, Frankie? That's it. Yeah. Stanley. I'm taking a million. Sweet baby James gets it.
That's right.
So we're all going to dinner. And so we look down the whole table. There's 28 people.
Wait. We got to finish the cell phone story. It's the best story.
It's great.
You don't understand. It's amazing.
Okay.
So Sarah wants to take her phone out. That's when she realized she doesn't have it. We're now on our way back because we're getting ready to come here, yada, yada. So I'm like, all right, fine. So we're like, okay, we're going to go back to the two places we spent the most time at. We go back to the store. Not only did they have her phone, like in New York, forget about it. It would have been stolen, rebranded, renamed, reassigned, like, done. Goodbye. You never
all of our pictures gone. Yeah, erased for life.
They'd be like all over the internet. Inappropriate. Okay, fine. No, not these ladies. They take it. They put it on the charger for her in the hopes that we'll come back and that when she retrieves
it, and it's fully
it,
charged.
She'll have a full charge. And we just stood there. We were like, wow.
It was so wonderful.
I've had a hard time. So the people, for example, in the hotel, even though we all think they're spies, at least if you talk to Danielle Hoffman.
They're the nicest spies, right?
But that's what they're supposed to be, Sean. They're supposed to be nice. They're not supposed to be mean and scary.
They're the nicest spies. But honestly, so I tried the hotel manager, like she's making breakfast 3 hours early so that everyone in the crew can start eating at 3 a.m. local time.
Absolutely. And they don't even want to take a tip. They don't.
Well, that was my next point. And I forced, I literally gave this woman and this other guy that did a lot. They helped us a lot yesterday. And
Michelle and V.
Yeah. And I gave them $100 each, American dollars. And they were fighting me. I mean, it was like a knockdown drag out.
I chased Michelle down the hallway. Blair was witness to this.
Yeah.
She would not take money from me.
No, but I won. I don't lose. I like to win those fights.
And she really appreciated that because I think culturally she was just saying, you know, I want to do this for you because you're here, you're guests in
my
country.
She's also a spy.
And she's a spy. And then she thought, I can't really take money from the guy that I'm marking.
Yeah. Oh, great. Is that great? I'm being a mark here, too, on top of everything.
All right, so go back to your dinner.
Well, and then, so everybody's 30 people at this dinner, and, you know, it's like everybody works really hard. I mean, you got crews behind the scenes. First, it's the most insane thing. You walk outside in Singapore, and you start dripping water sweat. And I don't sweat. All the years I've been on TV, I've not been a sweater. I'm doing the show last night, and I am drenched. And everybody, Dr. Gorka is drenched. Daniel Hoffman is drenched. Sarah is not drenched. How did you not sweat in that?
I don't know. I think it's because I grew up in this weather, so I'm used to it. So my body just, I don't sweat that way. But you guys were really sweating. It was getting very uncomfortable up there.
Well, it was almost like, remember when I first...
Now, if I said that, you would give me such a ration of you-know-what. But she says it, you're like, you're right, Sarah. We were all really perspirating. It was uncomfortable for you. We're sorry.
No, it's pretty...
No, he just laughed at me.
All right, let's take some calls. We're in Singapore. I know so many of you want to join in here. 800-941-SEAN. You guys can stay on the mic and if you want to jump in. Michelle is in Colorado. Michelle, hi. How are you? you? Welcome to the Sean Hannity Show. Welcome to Singapore, and we're glad you called.
I just have to say I was watching your show last night, and I got overwhelmed with emotion. What Trump is doing right now, it's beyond unbelievable. If you don't believe in God and how God looks out for America, you have to believe it now. Because this is a godsend. It's Reagan again at just the right time to save our country. The thing that you know makes me so angry is the mental disorder that I run into all the time living in Boulder County of people that have such disdain for this presidency. And it doesn't matter how many facts you back up to say what a great presidency this is. Facts are irrelevant. That doesn't matter. They just want to hate this guy. But I have got to tell you, I was emotional last night. I really was.
You know, you're not the only one. A lot of people wrote me, said the same thing. You're not alone. And it's amazing that people understand how profound this really is. Because what's the alternative? I mean, the possibility that he goes even more nuclear, that he builds bigger missiles, that he can reach the continental United States, that he fires a nuclear weapon one day at Seoul, South Korea. If this gets done, this is deeply profound. And I think instinctively, you understand that. That's a good thing. That's not a bad thing. You care about your fellow man.
I care about the country, and I stand up for President Trump every day. Even at my son's preschool, I had an incident with one of the parents there. And I just asked them straight up, you tell me exactly what you don't like about Trump. And they don't have a word to say. They have nothing. In fact, they actually admitted, I'm not up to date on current events. I said, no, you're not up to date on current events. And therefore, you have no right to vote in this country. And I had no problem saying it. And by the way, this is at my son's preschool.
Oh, that's great. Good. We like people who stand up and take a strong stand. Michelle, thank you. Glad you're enjoying it. Lainey is in Houston, Texas. KTRH, welcome to Singapore. You're on the Sean Hannity Show.
Hey, Sean. I am so excited about tonight. Everyone is speculating about what happened, and you're going to get the story, and I'm thrilled.
Oh, thank you, by the way. And I know the media hates it. You know, I will say this. Why do I think that many so-called anchors of cable news, if Stormy Daniels was 50 hours in the air away, they'd probably fly the 50 hours. But if you're talking about the potential for denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula and the risk to Guam, Japan, even China and the continental United States, that's not worthy news for them. Because they're so obsessed with either Robert Mueller and the Russia, Russia, Russia narrative or Stormy. And maybe if Michael Avenatti was here, maybe they would have, you know, come. But a lot of them didn't bother making the trip. Isn't that amazing?
And the most sad part is these celebrities who desperately want ink and publicity will head out for their moral preening and try and outdo with insults. And they're just making themselves more and more irrelevant when you've had this man go shake up the G7, then jet to the other side of the world, and now they're going to be denuclearized. I mean, the irony is his show was to find the most creative, competent, tenacious person to hire for a job. This man is the best employee the United States has ever had. Unbelievable.
You know,
and
it's an unbelievable opportunity. You know, this is the thing. You know, it's funny because so many people don't remember Ronald Reagan. They don't remember Gorbachev and Reagan. They don't remember Reykjavik. They don't remember the rhetoric that so many in the media and so many on the left predicted it's going to cause nuclear war. The parallels are, frankly, amazing. All right, Lainey. Yeah, that's my interview with the president. And I know the president well. He walked in the room and he was extraordinarily happy with the results. And it was obvious. And I saw Secretary of State Pompeo. He was excited and said there had been more progress made behind the scenes that they'll be talking about. The president mentions that in the interview. And we cover a lot of territory about the behind the scenes. He tells the whole story. I think you'll enjoy it. So that's happening tonight, and then we'll get full reaction from Sarah and Dr. Gorka and Daniel Hoffman. But we appreciate it. It's certainly worth the trip. Let's go. What do you guys not want to participate? Because I said you can comment. Anything you want to add?
You're doing a fantastic job.
Fantastic.
We were stunned at how great.
We're stunned at how great. Okay.
Into silence.
Into silence. We don't want to interrupt, Sean, but we'd be more than happy to add our two cents.
Listen, it is very rare. Politicians, and this is where I think Trump, through the prism of history, is going to be transformational.
When we talk, this is what happens.
Exactly. Trump is going to be seen through the prism of history as transformational. Transformational is that Americans are going to like somebody that is not part of the swamp, not part of the bureaucracy, that is at odds with the... all systems are normal, meaning it doesn't get done. Promises made, promises kept, moving like a businessman, getting things done, and making and keeping your promises. Don't forget, Hannity tonight, 9 a.m. here, local time in Singapore, 9 p.m. regular time, Fox News Channel, my interview with the president, full complete reaction to the historic summit here in Singapore. All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. Let not your heart be troubled. Hannity tonight, our exclusive interview with President Trump right after the summit that he had, the historic summit with Kim Jong-un. We got a good 20 minutes with the president. We'll air it in its entirety. We follow it up with news analysis. We have Dr. Gorka, Sarah Carter, Daniel Hoffman, and much, much more. We hope you'll join us from Singapore, Hannity, Fox News Channel, 9 Eastern. We hope you'll set your DVR also. We'll leave it for now. We'll see you tonight at 9, back here in Singapore tomorrow. Thank you, as always, for being with us. See you tonight.